Hi, I'm the Jumper, the one who came out of Louisiana, the host of Southern Blues After the Midnight Hour, every Thursday at midnight until 2 a.m., where we get your weekend off and running. And hey, if you ready, we ready to party with the blues. If you are, let's do it tonight.
Oil and gasoline prices are going through the roof.
Tell me about it. I can't afford to drive to the grocery store.
We've reached the tipping point, so I'm going to give you some tips that could save you hundreds of dollars a year on gas.
Tipping point? I've reached my clipping point. I feel like Ellen Scissorhands clipping all those coupons.
Tip number one, keep your tires properly inflated. You could save enough money to buy a gallon of orange juice every month.
Can do.
Tip number two, driving 60 instead of 70 on highways and not racing around town can buy you bacon and eggs every day.
Wow!
Tip number three, cut the idling, lower the AC, and ditch the junk in the trunk. That could buy you bread and butter, and maybe some grits.
You mean by driving smarter, I can eat breakfast free for a year? Wow!
For more wow tips for your pocketbook and the planet, go to the Alliance to Save Energy's website, drivesmarterchallenge.org.
Can I substitute a prune Danish for the grits?
Good afternoon, this is WHFR Dearborn, and you're listening to the program called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. Today, my special guest is Jim Puro. He is a yoga instructor and president of Yoga for Peace. Welcome to the show, Jim. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you for having me here this afternoon.
Well, you're welcome. So let's just start at the beginning. How did you become interested in yoga?
Well, I was actually doing yoga before I knew what yoga was. But I got interested in classes just out of curiosity. I was wondering, what's this yoga about? So it took me into a class, did my first class, and really experienced peace of mind during that first class, like I probably never had since I was an infant or small child. And wow, I was hooked.
Mm-hmm.
I just really enjoyed
what
it.
Age were you at that time?
Let's see, probably upper 20s. Mm-hmm. It's back around 1992.
Okay, so you've just been doing it for couple of years then, just joking.
Yes.
I mean, you're a little bit older now, but we won't go into that. But that's great. I mean, it was something that you didn't really expect to find, but through practice, you just knew that that was right for you?
Yeah. I've always been very physical, athletic. I played hockey. I was a runner. So I really enjoyed the stretching aspect of the yoga class, but it was the peace of mind at the end that really hooked me.
Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a surprise to you? You didn't expect that?
No, I have no expectation of that at all. It's definitely
mm-hmm.
a surprise.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess eventually you became certified to become a teacher yourself?
Correct, yes. Yes, I took a 200-hour teacher training program originally. Got certified through the Yoga Alliance, which is a nationally recognized organization that sets standards for teacher training. And since then, I've continued to study and grow and learn, so it's been a fantastic journey.
Mm-hmm. And now you teach it yourself?
Correct, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So kind of you're interested in it or you got started because of athletics, would you say?
No, not because of athletics. Really, it was offered at a church that I was attending, and it was just curiosity that brought me in. And
mm-hmm. You were hooked, huh?
I was hooked,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So what is yoga? What would be your definition of yoga?
I actually have like a dual definition of yoga. Because
okay.
And yoga is so vast. But my first definition of yoga is peeling away all the labels that we've gotten since we were, really since the time we were born. We were born and right away we've got a label. We're a baby. We're a boy. We're a girl. We get our names. And just from that day on, we just get more and more labels.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we become, you know, we get labels going through school, we get labels in the family, we become parents, we, you know, all these different labels that we have, our jobs. So yoga's about getting to the core of who you really are, peeling away those labels. That's my first definition, getting to your own true nature.
Mm-hmm.
My second definition is all the techniques that are used to get you there, all those techniques that peel away the layers. And there's a lot of different techniques, and there's a lot of different forms of yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And every person's a little bit different. So everybody needs a little different technique. Not everybody does exactly the same thing to find their own true self.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes yoga really interesting, is that the practices are so vast and varied and different. But all the practices done with a sustained effort and concentration will get you there.
Mm-hmm. But you specialize in Hatha yoga?
Hatha.
Yes. Excuse me, Hatha yoga.
Well, actually, they would correct me and say Hatha.
Oh, really? Okay, so that's even better, right?
Yes.
Okay, but what is that? What, you know, is the difference between that and maybe some of the other types of yoga out there?
Well, other types of yoga include meditation, chanting, pranayama, which is learning to control your breath and do different breathing techniques. And some of that is included in a Hatha yoga class. Hatha yoga mostly is about the physical postures that you see nowadays in advertisements and the commercials and so forth, and see it more and more on TV.
Right. Yes, I know they have that one program on PBS. There's a woman that does it. It's an early morning program. But it seemed to me like it was more physical. Now, from what I've read, it's also about the mind and body and spirit as well, all those three things together, correct?
Absolutely, yes. And if you look at some of the earlier text on yoga, it included very little about the physical postures. It was more in meditating, more in quieting the mind, more in going inside and doing inner work.
Mm-hmm.
And more about controlling your ways of being, the way you act in society, the way you treat other people.
Mm-hmm.
The physical stuff started around the 15th century.
A long time ago.
But the other stuff came a lot earlier, 3,000 to 5,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And gradually it just morphed into, I guess, what most Americans practice today?
Yeah, you can say that. You know, it took a lot of different paths. You know, yoga moved into the Hindu path, the Buddhist path, the Jain path, and just really spread out and became a lot of different things. And eventually, you know, came to America, and it's kind of like everything, been Americanized in some ways.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But there's still a lot of tradition out there. There's very good practices, and some that are really interesting, and some people wonder if it's really yoga.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, everybody needs something a little bit different. As long as you really are focused on what you're doing, you can attain the true yoga, which means union with the divine, union with the true self or the source.
Mm-hmm. So do you find that by doing yoga, you do meditate in a certain manner?
Well, there's different ways to meditate. There's some that are very traditional. There's some that are kind of new agey. I started practicing meditation more about 3 or 4 years ago. I was up at a retreat center called Song in the Morning Retreat Center. It's a pretty amazing place up just north of Gaylord in Michigan. And we happened to be there on the day that they were celebrating the founder's birthday. And everybody from the 70s that were there when this organization was put together up there were talking about the teacher, Yogacharya. And every one of them talked about how he always said, you have to meditate. You get up in the morning, first thing you do is meditate. Before you go to bed at night, you meditate. You know, meditation's so important in your practice. So after listening to this and everybody talking about it, I just really took it on. And I said, okay, I'm going to meditate every day. So I started, and I found amazing things happening. You mentioned my age. I'm 46, and I noticed a few years ago, you know, before I started the meditation, that I was starting to forget a lot of things.
Yeah, okay, that's not good.
That's not good. And I think that's, you know, kind of normal for most people as they're getting older. We just, you know, especially the more that gets put on your plate, you're just forgetting things. Starting with the practice of meditation, I noticed that, wow, I'm starting to forget less and remember more.
Mm-hmm.
I became calmer, of course, more reflective. And something that I've strived for is more peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, meditation's been very transformational.
Right. You felt it just enhanced your life so much, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I guess initially, though, you did it through, you wanted to do it because it was physical. Now, you said it stripped away layers of, you know, the different names and titles and labels were given. Did you experience that right away? I mean, did you feel like you were a new person as soon as you started to really practice yoga?
Not right away. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's kind of, I'm not kind of sure where to go with this, because I really started practicing yoga before I started taking yoga classes, because I was actually doing metaphysical reading and exploring different things, and I was doing breath control techniques, which are part of yoga, but mm-hmm. they weren't called yoga in the material that I was reading. But when I started taking the formal traditional yoga class, changes were slow. I mean, they're not really quick. You know, I didn't feel like this veil lowered at the first class,
right.
So to say.
You woke up and everything was beautiful, you know.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. So things have happened slowly, I would say, but sometimes extremely fast and extremely profound, just based on what I was doing at the time and the techniques and the practices.
Mm-hmm. When you're actually doing yoga, do things, I don't know, come to you, perhaps visions, anything like that when you're doing it?
Not necessarily visions. Sometimes I get very intuitive, mm-hmm. and I find that very helpful in life. And I find that the more I've practiced yoga, the more intuitive I become.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you gone to leave the house and you're thinking, oh, I should grab this or I should grab that? You know, and you think, ah, no, I don't need that. You know, it's really your intuition talking. And
mm-hmm.
learning to listen to that is so important.
Right.
And yoga has really helped me with that.
Right. Well, again, I think a lot of people ignore that little voice, you know, mm-hmm. that you would call intuition. And many times, you know, if you do follow your intuition, you know, you might think, oh, I can't do that or I shouldn't do that. And in retrospect, you think, you know, I should have done that. I should have listened to that little voice in the back of my head.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So as you continued with yoga, I mean, did you think that, wow, this is something that I really want to get into? I mean, it's pretty much your life now, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's been my life really for the last 8 years. And I can kind of tell you how that started. I was actually working a job in sales, fire alarm design, burglar alarm sales, and I'd been doing that for about 12 years, and I got laid off. And I didn't want to go back to the corporate world, and a friend of mine who was successful in business said, well, if you want to do something on your own, which I was contemplating, he said, do what you love. So I spent time soul searching. I really spent days just kind of meditative and just kind of looking inward and thinking about all the things I had ever done in my life. And came up with a couple things that I really loved. And that yoga kept popping into my mind. And, you know, at first I'd kind of say, oh, yoga, you know, you can't make a living doing yoga. You know, you can't do that. So the other thing I really loved was Subway. You know, and,
oh, yeah. Well,
me and Jared right there, you know.
Uh-huh, yeah. Your pals, right?
So I called up Subway, and they said, oh, where do you want to open up a location? The location I kind of picked out, my cousin had bought a building, and I was looking to, I could lease the space from him if I wanted. And a Subway location was going in right across the street. So I was like, well, it isn't going to be Subway, you know.
Right.
So I kind of went back inward, and yoga kept coming back to me, yoga, yoga, yoga. So I was like, okay, I guess this is what's meant to happen. So I followed it and opened up a yoga center downriver, helped run that for a number of years, and it didn't pan out so well. It actually ended up closing, and then a group of us got together. We wanted to keep yoga going, so we formed Yoga for Peace, a nonprofit organization, and we've been offering classes on a donation basis. All our services, whether meditation classes, retreats, yoga teacher training, a 200-hour learning program that we put together, all the services are offered on a donation basis, and it's been going wonderfully. We've got a lot of people volunteering to help out and run the place and do what needs to take to keep yoga going downriver.
Mm-hmm. Real briefly, I just want to remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway, and today my special guest is Jim Pirro. He's a yoga instructor and president of Yoga for Peace. So you're able to make a living, though, by giving yoga lessons and meditation lessons, things like that?
Yeah, I'm not driving a BMW, that's for sure.
Yeah, but, you know, who is, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah, but it's paying the bills, and
mm-hmm. Well, that's important, because
be happier.
Right,
that's the important thing.
Right. Well, you know, they say that if you find a job you really love, you never work another day in your life.
And that's how it's been. You know, I don't feel like I'm going to work. I don't feel that drudgery. You know,
right.
I really enjoy what I do.
Right. You don't resent it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's very important. You know, and okay, maybe, you know, You're not a multimillionaire again. Who is? But the important thing is you're doing what you love, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I feel. And like you said, you know, I never regret it. It's not like a job. I love helping people out. And what's really kept me going is just hearing people come back to me and say, wow, I can't believe that I'm sleeping through the night. Mm-hmm. I can't believe that I'm waking up pain-free. I can't believe that, you know, all that stress that I used to carry is just gone. And, you know, people at work tell me, you know, what's going on? You seem so different. You seem so relaxed. You know, all these people come into me and tell me how much yoga has meant to them over the years. It's just, that's what really gets it. That's what really makes it. You know, I don't need a giant six-figure check to be happy.
Right.
That really makes a difference for me.
Right. Well, I think that's a common thread through many of my guests is the fact that they really enjoy helping people, and it's rewarding for them to get that positive feedback that they've really made a difference in somebody's life. Do you feel like that?
Absolutely, yes. And we make not just myself, but the other yoga teachers in the area, they make a huge difference for people in their personal lives, but also I think it really makes a difference in the community itself. You get more and more people being nicer and nicer to each other.
Yeah, well,
that makes a difference.
Right, right. That would be great if that just snowballs and who knows what could happen. A better world, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, if somebody comes to, you know, Yoga for Peace and they say, okay, teach me yoga, what do you start with?
We usually start people off in the asana classes, the physical postures, the hatha yoga that you were mentioning, based on their level of physical ability, if they have limitations. Because most people in America can't sit down and meditate. I mean, that's just the way it is. Most people, if you put them on the floor, they're uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And to sit with your legs crossed or to sit for any amount of time, it's just not going to happen. Most people's bodies are out of shape, not flexible. So people start off there. And it's a great way to start off because you're going to start to feel better. You get more flexible. You get more balanced. You get stronger. And when your body's functioning better, you heal things that need to be healed. Your capabilities start to increase. Your self-confidence starts to increase. You are able to sit longer when you need to. And just doing the hatha yoga also creates more awareness of what's going on in your body. You start to realize when you're carrying stresses, you start to realize when your heart rate's up, you start to realize when you're holding your breath. There's a lot of parts of life we go through pretty much unconscious of what our body's really doing, what our mind's really thinking. And the classes really start to increase your awareness of what's happening inside your body, outside your body.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, so if you are feeling stress, I mean, it helps to relieve that. I mean, if you're feeling tight in a certain area of your body, you can work on that a little bit to help improve your general health?
Yes, yes. And a lot of people, most of the people that come to Yoga for Peace are actually over 50.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that includes me.
Yeah. I mean, not to say all of them do, but a large majority are over 50. And what they're finding is as they're aging physically, they can't do the things they used to like to do.
Right.
Especially when you hit that retirement age. Okay, now I've got money, I've got time. But, you know, I can't get out of bed without being sore.
Right.
I can't go out and do the things I love because my body won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yoga's a very gentle way of nurturing the body back to health, back to its capabilities, mm-hmm. back to its full potential.
Mm-hmm. I think that is true because, like they say, health is everything. I don't care how much money you have. If you don't have your health, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if that's something that helps promote better health, more power to yoga, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Now, does that, I mean, say somebody, you're saying older persons or older people, maybe they want to play golf, but they're stiffening up. If they come to yoga, that might help, you know, relax them a little bit so they swing the club better. Maybe it's easier for them to go on walks, runs, things like that.
Yeah, kayaking, anything that they're doing out there physically, even yard work, even housework.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, really? Even housework? Because that's, you know, a lot of people don't like to do that, but, you know,
they don't.
Somebody does. Yeah.
But those things have to be done.
Right.
And would you rather do them with ease, or would you rather be sore the next day?
Right. So would you say, in essence, it's a type of fountain of youth?
That's kind of an interesting way of putting it. But definitely, you maintain your youthfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
But you can be any age to do it, right? Even children can do yoga?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Usually, well, they do have, you know, like really little kids classes, but usually about the age of 4 for girls, maybe 6 for boys. The girls tend to mature a little earlier. Mm-hmm. They're ready to start classes on short levels, maybe 30 minutes, and they have a lot of fun with it. Kids' classes are energetic, and you move around, and kids are very flexible. They can do all kinds of fun things.
Yeah.
And then, you know, all the way up, I've had people in their 80s and 90s doing yoga. One of my favorite students is going to be 78 this January, and she's just amazing, the things she does, and
mm-hmm.
hanging upside down from equipment that we have. And
really?
It's just fantastic to see people stay so active and keep fit.
Right. Well, again, if somebody comes to you, they're very stiff, they don't move too well, mm-hmm. it's got to be rewarding to get to the point where they are much more limber.
Yeah, and to maintain the range of motion of your joints.
Mm-hmm.
That's so important. A lot of things we take for granted.
Yes.
And simple things, you know, as you age, become difficult. People sometimes can't open the cabinet in the kitchen and reach up and grab something from the top shelf anymore.
Right.
They lost the mobility of the shoulder. And the simple yoga movements and techniques, you work on bringing the range of motion back.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very rewarding in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Do you work with people that are perhaps recovering from an injury, perhaps they have a rotator mm-hmm. cuff injury? You'll help
yes.
them improve that?
Yeah, we do a lot of therapeutic type work with injuries. What we're seeing a lot of is scoliosis. And you know, working with the muscles of the body, the muscles control where the bones are, especially of the spine.
Mm-hmm.
So training people to take control of their muscles, hold them in certain ways, do certain exercises. We've had people correct scoliosis problems of their spine, and that's huge.
That's amazing, really, isn't it?
It is when you think that, you know, a lot of times if they're going into the doctor or the hospitals or whatever, they want to put rods or pins in their back and losing their mobility for the rest of their lives.
Right. Yeah, again, I mean, you have to take that into account, too. I would imagine if people really do have serious physical limitations that can't be helped, right? I mean, you have to work around that.
Yes. Yeah, we've had students come in that have been handicapped. I worked with a gentleman once. I got swallowed by a combine when he was on a farm.
Mm.
So he was severely handicapped, had a lot of limitations. But we just modified, adapted, did things that were healthy for his joints, and he was still able to do the practices.
Mm-hmm. Was that hard for you to work with someone like that?
Luckily, I've been trained really well,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't. You know, once you understand the biomechanics of the body and how it works, it's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm. So you started Yoga for Peace because I guess your regular yoga studio wasn't really making it, and you're now a nonprofit organization?
Correct. Yes. Yes. Yoga for Peace is a nonprofit organization, and we just went out on the limb and said, hey, what would happen if we just offered all the services on a donation basis and let people donate if they want, not if they can't. And it's worked out really well. It's kind of weird to have something like yoga exclusive,
mm-hmm.
because yoga is inclusive. It includes everything.
Mm-hmm.
And why limit people that don't have the funds from doing yoga? They're probably the ones that need it the most.
Right.
And we've encouraged people to come and practice. And we encourage people that have a little bit more, if they're doing well, donate a little bit more to help out the ones that
mm-hmm.
don't have it. And
mm-hmm.
it's been working.
Do you have some type of target figure, though, that you would appreciate if people could give at least $15, or not necessarily?
We do have suggested donation ranges, because what we found is a lot of people come in and be like, I don't have any idea. I mean, we're talking like donating $5, $50. So we created a suggested donation range of 12 to 16 for a regular hatha yoga class. But again, encourage people to just donate what they can. And if you can't, that's fine, too.
Mm-hmm. But if they want to donate more, obviously they can, right?
Yeah, and a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's nice that people share that, though. Like you said, some of the people that need it the most can't really afford it, and they're concerned about that. And it's nice that other people pick up the slack.
Sure, yeah.
Now,
it really gives a true sense of community.
It's right, really nice. Right. Now, when, again, somebody comes to you, do you just do a class of what? 10 people, 12 people, doesn't really matter?
The classes offered at Yoga for Peace are they're dropping classes, and we never know how many people will be there. Mm-hmm. So they're set scheduled classes, and sometimes there'll be one person there, sometimes there'll be 20. You just never know how many are going to come in for the class.
But even if there's just one person, you still teach the class.
Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to, again, remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Jim Pirro. He is a yoga instructor and president of Yoga for Peace. And I talked to you recently, and you told me that you're now instructing yoga here, or teaching yoga, rather, here at Henry Ford Community College.
Yes, this semester I started teaching a class on Monday and Wednesday mornings, actually two classes, one at 7:08 a.m. and one at 8:08 a.m. And I've really been enjoying it. They're kind of short classes. They're 50-minute classes, which makes it hard to get a good practice in. But I think the students are really feeling the benefits of the practice and enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that something where they get a grade in that class?
Yeah, it is an accredited class, and they do get a grade, yes.
Is that like a one-hour credit, or?
I think it's 2 credit hours.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. Just, looking at it from the outside, if I were a student, I would think that, I don't mean to demean yoga or the way you teach it, but you might think that's an easy A. Would you necessarily agree with that, or is it something that you really still have to study? And what types of things do you study in order to pass this class?
Good question. First off, let me answer by saying, it is at 7 a.m. and 8 a.m. basically, and a lot of people have a hard time getting up that early at college age. So right there, the attendance is part of your grade.
Okay.
So you have to be there to get an A. We also are reading a book called Total Yoga, and there's questions due from that. There's things to study, the postures, the benefits, muscles. So learning about the body, learning about yoga overall, and there are quizzes and a final.
Mm-hmm.
Plus reading assignments and answering questions. So.
Okay, yeah, so there really is something to it. It's just not the practice of yoga per se. I mean, it's also different aspects of it.
Right. The learning is mostly outside as far as learning the benefits and learning the muscles and learning more about yoga, because in 50 minutes, there's not a lot of time to lecture. So we mostly use the 50 minutes for the practice itself and do the reading and the assignments outside the class.
Mm-hmm. Now at the studio, yourself, when you teach it, how long do those sessions last, generally speaking?
Anywhere from an hour to 2 hours.
Oh, really? So mm-hmm. 2 hours is a good amount of time? It's not too long?
The students that I have prefer the 2 hours.
Really?
Yeah, they really like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it gives us enough time to really center, get present, take a good amount of time to warm up the body, do some preliminary asana, get into some good deep stretching. At the end, take a nice long relaxation. And we also do meditation for anywhere from 5 to 20 minutes, depending on how the class went.
Mm-hmm. Do you advise people on perhaps their diet or anything like that, or is that totally up to the person themselves?
In most of the Hatha Yoga classes, we don't, but when we get into the 200-hour higher learning program, that's where we really get into the nuts and bolts of yoga, and that's where we really start to talk about diet and nutrition. We even bring in a local nutritionist who's very wise, and he talks to the group about nutrition. We use a book called Yoga of Eating, and you might think, Yoga of Eating, what's that all about? What do they tell you to eat? What do they tell you not to eat? And they really don't. What the Yoga of Eating prescribes is that you listen to your body, that intuition, that
right.
Knowing that the body has. If you really get in touch with it and listen to what it's saying, it'll tell you what to eat and not eat. Like if I were to come to you and say, hey, Mike, man, I got this great diet. You need to eat strawberries, you need to eat this, and you need to eat that.
Right, yeah.
And you're like, well, yeah, that's great, Jim, but I'm allergic to strawberries. One would kill me.
Right.
Not everybody's going to be okay with the same diet. Every person's unique. Every person's different. So everybody needs something different.
Mm-hmm.
So we teach people to listen to their bodies when it comes to food and nutrition.
So you don't say that, well, you can't eat meat or anything like that, right? It just depends on what that person feels they need?
Right. I've heard studies and read stuff that there isn't one healthy indigenous society out there that's not getting protein from some source and having healthy generations of children. So we don't prescribe that people stop eating meat or, you know, become vegans or vegetarians. To really find your own way. Not to be, you know, not, hey, my way is McDonald's, you know, but really listen to your body and find what's working for it. A lot mm-hmm. of people get ill because of what they're putting in their body. And if you put healthy things in, your body's going to be healthier.
Mm-hmm.
But it's which healthy things, and that's what you got to tune into.
Do you try to stay away from red meat, though?
Personally, I do. Personally, I am a vegetarian, but some people would say, oh, you're not a vegetarian because I eat salmon. And
right. Well, not so, a strict one, anyway. A vegan.
Yeah, I'm definitely not a vegan. I do eat some dairy products, cheese and things. Mm-hmm. So.
Eggs.
Yeah, I get protein from eggs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've been to a vegan restaurant, and it's, I mean, if that's your thing, that's great, but it's mm-hmm. very bland, and it's not really exciting for me. I mean, I'm the kind of guy that will go to White Castle's, you know, that kind of, you know, diet right there.
Yeah, I mean, not to say that a vegan diet is, you know, wrong for, you know, everybody. I mean, there might be some people out there that it really works for them, and if you're that person, great, but a lot of people are doing it for a cause or a reason and, you know, really doing a disservice to their bodies and their minds overall.
Mm-hmm. Now, what other things do you do through Yoga for Peace? Do you try to, I mean, obviously you try to promote the practice of yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Do you actually go out and try to raise funds for various events or causes?
Well, as a new organization, we just recently had our 501c3 approved through the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
So we're able to receive donations that are tax deductible now. We're also a tax-free organization now, and we're in the process of doing a little bit more paperwork through the state so we can go out and actually do some fundraising, because that is something we'd like to do to make our services even more available to those that can't afford it.
Mm-hmm. So do you work with other organizations that promote yoga as well?
We have been working with the Guidance Center in Southgate and offering services there as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're a nonprofit organization as well. That's a relationship that's just starting, but we hope it really goes somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And you're based in Southgate, correct?
Correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you've been there for how many years now?
Yoga for Peace has been there since the beginning of the year, but we've been having yoga out of that building for, 8.5 years now.
Okay. Now, is this something that you thought of yourself, or was it a collective effort between you and other people to establish Yoga for Peace?
I think it was a combination of things. One of the things we used to do here in Dearborn is a event called Yoga for Peace.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really how this nonprofit thing started. What we would do is get yogis from all over the area to come in. We'd have vendors come in. We'd have all day of music, food, free yoga. And at the end of the day, we'd do a large group meditation. One of the neat things, and if you Google this, it's really interesting to look this up and read about it. Transcendental meditation, people were doing experiments. They were coming into areas and they were saying, hey, we're going to bring 100 people into these areas. We're going to meditate for a month and we're going to see changes in your society, in your community. And one of the places they went into was Washington, D.C., and they told the police chief that they were coming, and this was kind of publicized, and the police chief was like, you know, it's going to take a lot more than 100 meditators to change, to make the changes that you're suggesting. They were suggesting that the crime rate would drop 20% in the month of July. And he said, it's going to take 2 feet of snow for the crime rate to drop 20% in the month of July here in Washington, D.C. Well, the meditators came in slowly, and the numbers built throughout the month, and they meditated longer throughout the month. And by the end of the month, statistically, they proved that crime rates had dropped 20% within that month.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, one of the things, you know, this is a metaphysical show, and, you know, quantum physics now is proving what in the science realm, that we're all one. They're proving what yogis knew thousands of years ago, and they were practicing to connect with that oneness.
Mm-hmm.
So when we meditate and connect with that oneness in large groups, it not only changes ourselves, it starts to changes the people in the community around us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's amazing.
Right.
I mean, that's huge. So so these events were put on for that reason, to
right.
start to make an influence on the community by bringing things like yoga and meditation and good music into the community and have different yoga centers help out and put it together and bring in all kinds of vendors with healthy items and green food and local farmers and bring that all together. So once, now that the nonprofit's been established and we've got our 501c3 and once all the paperwork's done, then we hope to hold these festivals again.
Mm-hmm. So what year was that when they actually went to Washington to do that?
Oh, I believe it was 98. Mm-hmm. But if you Google it, like Transcendental Meditation, mm-hmm. Washington, you'll find it real quickly.
Right. So it's like the ripple effect, right? I mean, once a group of people start to consciously change things, it just ripples outward and affects, like you say, your whole community.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like Mahatma Gandhi said, and I don't know the exact quote, but it was like, if you want to change the world, change yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The change you want to see in the world.
Right. Yeah, easier said than done sometimes, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you practice these large-scale meditations, I mean, how do you meditate, I guess is what I'm trying to find out. Do you concentrate on one sound, or you just practice being quiet, or how does that work?
I'm more of a traditionalist when it comes to meditation, and like the Yoga Sutras, which was written around 100 AD, they talk about meditation, and they say, when you get still, you sit in a good posture, you try not to react to your senses, and then you take your mind and concentrate on one object. It doesn't matter what the object is, but you concentrate your mind on one object and hold it there. And that's like the setup for meditation. And maybe meditation happens, maybe it doesn't. True meditation is when you and that object of concentration that you've chosen are one. You feel no difference. You feel like you are that object. So maybe you're focusing on the breath, for example. And you focus, and day in, day out, you've practiced focusing on the breath. All of a sudden, one day, you're sitting there, and all you feel like is you are your breath. You just feel like you're air moving back and forth. You don't feel anything else. You don't feel your feet that maybe have fallen asleep. You don't feel your hands. You don't feel anything. You're not aware of anything. You're just this breath moving back and forth.
Mm-hmm. So when you do this, though, you say fixate on an object. Can you fixate on, say, a tree or something like that?
Sure.
Or is it something that is more physical?
It can be anything. It can be a word that you repeat in your mind. It can be an emotion like love or peace, a symbol, anything you want to. Anything can be your object of concentration.
Mm-hmm. And once you repeat it enough or think about it enough, like you say, you just concentrate on that one thing and then everything else falls into place and takes care of itself?
Right. It's really about learning to control your mind. I mean, our mind is like a random thought generator.
It's
creating thoughts constantly. And the hardest thing to do is to try and stop your mind. If you say, okay, mind, stop having thoughts,
right,
it isn't going to happen.
Right.
The technique that the yogis learned is to concentrate the mind. Bring it to one thing. If you bring it to one thing and hold it there, all the other thoughts subside. But it takes practice.
Mm-hmm.
What I found when I started meditating is there was unsettled things in my life. So when I'd try to focus on one thing, my mind would go back to these unsettled things. So obviously, if you want to stay focused, you got to resolve the unsettled things.
Mm-hmm.
So for years of the beginning of my meditation practice, it was like trying to resolve some of the issues in my life that always came back to me, as well as keeping the focus of the mind.
Mm-hmm. So you tried to resolve these things through meditation?
Oh, not necessarily through meditation. I mean, if there's things out there in your life that conflicts with somebody or forgiveness that you have to do or just whatever keeps coming back into your mind, if there's something that's coming back into your mind, some way you have to find a way to resolve that issue.
Mm-hmm. And how would you do that? I mean, by actually interacting with that person that you're having a conflict with, or maybe it's eating too much food or drugs or whatever, you have to combat that?
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever the issue is, you have to find a way to resolve it. And it might be talking it out with a person or just, mentally resolving in your mind, okay, me and that person see the world from two different eyes. We're not going to be in agreement. We can't have a conversation, but that's okay.
Right.
I'll be me, and life is great.
The other person's a jerk, and, they can just do whatever they want to, right?
Well, when you start to get away from the other person as a jerk and start to say, okay, that person is me.
Mm-hmm.
I am one with that person. So if I'm thinking they're a jerk, I'm a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to think they're a jerk, but so that, because then that's not really resolving that issue.
Right. You're, in essence, like you said, just seeing yourself again.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that helps you work through different problems. I guess over time, don't you feel like you're a better person? I know you mentioned that earlier, that you feel like you've really improved. What would you say, your soul, or how would you put that?
I don't think the soul needs improving. I think it's the mind and the mask that we put over the soul, that our egos that we're running around with.
Right.
That's all that needs to be fixed.
Mm-hmm. So, right.
Or maybe better said, just to get back to the soul, get back to that level.
Right. Well, again, it's interesting you brought that up, Jim, is the fact that, you know, ego. I think ego gets in the way a lot, and you can't really progress sometimes because you get caught up in, I don't know, wanting to project yourself a certain way or whatever to others. You know, mm-hmm. It's hard to let go sometimes. Do you find that to be true?
Sure. I think that's one of the toughest parts of the yoga practice, is really getting to a point. Like if I walked in the room and said, "Hey, Mike, man, I love you," what would you think?
Okay. I can't say that on the air. Sorry.
See, exactly. Exactly. So, being, if you think of everybody as one, mm-hmm. Okay, why wouldn't you love somebody? Why
right.
wouldn't you do it?
Yeah. Right.
And then those reasons pop up. Okay, what are they going to think of me? How am I going to look? All that kind of stuff.
Right. So. Right. But, I mean, how do you get to that point? Would you say that, I don't know, maybe you can't make this blanket statement, but would you say that you do love everybody, or you try to love everybody? And I mean not, of course, in a physical manner or whatever, but just you accept them for who they are.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest part of the practice. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Is that hard to do?
I don't think it's hard to do. I think it's hard to remember to do it.
Mm-hmm. But over the years, as you practice more and more meditation, you find that it's easier and easier to do?
Yeah, because when you start to get inside to your true self, and the more and more time you spend with your true self, the more you realize that same true self is in somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
Well, the only difference between us is this ego stuff we're talking about.
Right. So like you said, you see yourself in the other person. What is you're looking at is reflected right back to you, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, can yoga help people with, say, drug problems or weight problems? Perhaps if they start to practice that, they might feel that they don't need as much food, or they don't need the drugs to survive.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of food addictions, a lot of food problems are basically either emotional things, people run into food for emotions, or truly not loving yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start to resolve through some of these things, that happens through the practice of meditation, doing different practices. I remember the first time I did an asana class, I looked over and the guy, next to me was probably 10 years older, and as we were bending over to touch our toes, there was no way he was going to bend over to touch his toes. And right there in my mind, I thought to myself, I'm going to watch what I eat. I'm not going to have a belly like that guy's belly. Because
mm-hmm.
I want to stay limber. I want to stay flexible. Lots of cases of drug addiction where people have overcome their drug habits through yoga. Because a lot of the things you're getting from the drug, you'll get from yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the same things. The higher serotonin levels, the higher the euphoric feelings, all those things you can get from yoga.
Mm-hmm.
So what people find is that when they start practicing yoga, wow, if I can get that buzz, if I can get that feeling, if I can get that
right.
euphoria from a yoga practice and not come down to where, I'm crashed and need another hookup, why should I do that drug with all these side effects and all these other issues? Why not just keep practicing yoga?
Right. It's a lot cheaper rather than trying to score the drugs or whatever. Just do it naturally, correct?
Sure, yeah. Cheaper and better for you.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about people that have suffered some kind of trauma, either physical or emotional? Again, does yoga help them work through certain things?
Yeah, absolutely. Going inside, quieting the mind, it has amazing benefits. It helps a lot of people just to reflect and resolve things in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're meditating, do you sometimes have visions, perhaps?
Visions. I think a lot of people have visions. I don't think I'm one of those people that have visions.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, not visions in the fact that you're going to be able to predict world events or anything, but I mean, just on a personal level, perhaps you are having a conflict with somebody that's close to you in your personal life. You might get some kind of vision on how to correct the situation.
Yes, yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, those things do happen. Yeah, I don't see, like, things in my third eye or anything like that working out and playing out. But definitely ideas and different keys to different situations and different things have definitely come to me in meditation on how to handle things.
Right. Well, you can sometimes see, perhaps, just for your own personal benefit, how to do things better so that it would benefit you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, benefit me and the other person.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, just even if there was some kind of task or job that you wanted to do just by practicing yoga, that might help you use that. I guess use the mobility to correct the situation a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. Both physically and mentally, I've seen that happen. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Have you worked with people that have... I know you mentioned the one gentleman that, you know, went through the combine. What about emotional trauma? Have you worked with people that have really suffered some kind of terrible emotional setback?
I have. Yeah, I don't know if I really want to talk about those.
Okay, you don't have to, but I'm just curious. Yes. Again, it's something that you have worked with in the past.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And again, I would imagine very rewarding when you can help people move on past the problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing I've seen a lot lately is people having difficulties in their life just because of the way they breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Being really stressed out, being really low energy and depressed. And then you start to talk with them, you start to work with them a little bit, and you start to find that just in the way they breathe, they're causing themselves to be stressed out. They're causing themselves to be too relaxed to the point where they have no energy and they're depressed.
Mm-hmm.
I see that a lot lately. People don't know how to breathe right.
Right. And just to remind everybody very quickly, I just want to remind them that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My guest is Jim Pirro. He's a yoga instructor and president of Yoga for Peace. And getting back to the breathing, don't most people breathe very shallow? I mean, that's part of the problem that leads to stress.
Well, it's not necessarily a function of how shallow, but mechanically how they're breathing, whether they're breathing from the ribs or the belly, and the length of time of the inhales and exhales, the duration. Those two things contribute to how your nervous system's being affected, whether it's staying at a nice homeostatic level or whether you're taking yourself into fight or flight or relaxing yourself too much, stimulating the sympathetic or the parasympathetic nervous system. So the way you breathe is very important.
Right, but you are supposed to breathe from the belly, if I understand that correctly, from what I've heard. Is that correct?
Well, you want to breathe from both the belly and the rib cage.
Okay.
You know, so if you're only breathing from the belly and not the ribs, that's going to tend to stimulate your parasympathetic nervous system, causing you to relax too much.
Right.
We don't want to be too relaxed in life. I mean,
right.
There's obviously appropriate times to relax. There's times when you can be stressed out and say, oh, I'm going to do some deep belly breathing, calm myself down.
Right. Well, I just know that, you know, I've done some athletics, like you mentioned, you know, you're involved in athletics. And sometimes when people get stressed out, they're not breathing correctly, so that they're not thinking correctly. Now, do you find that by practicing yoga, that helps athletes by breathing better so they're thinking better at crucial times?
Oh, not just athletes, everybody.
Mm-hmm. So yes. If you're a businessman or whatever, you've got an important presentation that'll help you work through it and do a better job just by improving your breathing?
Absolutely. Yeah, if you're going into a meeting and you're all nervous, anxious, wigged out, you're not going to do as good a job as going into that meeting being calm and relaxed and not stressed out, you know, very stable.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to make a big difference.
Right. And because of the way you breathe, would you say that you handle life better? I mean, things that come up, you're not
Absolutely.
As
way
upset?
Better. Way better than I used to.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Not one to fly off the handle or whatever and get upset?
Right. Yeah, I find those moments extremely rare.
Uh-huh. So when you're out on the road, you're not getting, you know, road rage or anything like that?
Right.
You just bless that person as they cut you off, you know.
Sounds like you know me.
Oh, really? Well, it's happened. You know, I mean, I drive I-94 every day, and I don't know. Some people can be difficult, including myself, so, you know.
Yeah.
But those things, you know, it's hard sometimes when you're confronted with that or what you consider to be an insult or something through daily life. You want to tell that person to perhaps do something that is not really nice to say to them, but now through yoga you find that you're not really getting upset with what people do to you.
Yeah, yeah, and the road rage is a great example. I learned years ago that, you know, why get upset about it? It doesn't make anything any better. You're actually doing harm to yourself. And, you know, haven't you been in that situation?
Yeah.
Haven't you accidentally cut somebody off? Haven't you been late and you drove like a maniac or pushed that light or didn't stop for the stop sign? We've all been there, unless you've been a very conscientious, safe driver. Hey, bless you. That's great. You know, so a lot of us have been there before, and now we see somebody else do it, and we're upset.
Right.
What sense does that make? And there could be a lot. I'd look at it this way. There's a lot of different things that could be causing them to drive that way. An infinite number of things. Lots of possibilities out there.
Right.
Right? And they could have a justified good reason. Maybe they're rushing to save somebody's life, or we never know.
Right.
And then you're going to curse them?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Send them a blessing. They need it.
Right. You just never know.
Yeah.
So, since you're a little more relaxed, do you perhaps allow more time to get to a destination now? Do you find that through life, you're just flowing through life a little bit better?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. You definitely time manage better.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like when you're not trying to hurry through life, the lights turn green. You know, when you're in the zone, kind of in the flow.
Right.
You just kind of go with it. You know, you're not, I find when, you know, at those times when you would try to hurry everything up in life, you're constantly slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Why not relax and enjoy the journey instead of pushing to the extreme where it's not any fun?
Haste makes waste, right?
Sure does.
Yeah. Well, I find that to be true sometimes. And from what I understand, some people that have reached the point that you have, like I said, they're a little more relaxed and they're not really consciously trying to start earlier or whatever, but they just find themselves, like you said, going with the flow and going through their day. And as they go through their day, it just becomes a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things start to interact more and things seem to work better as opposed to fighting them like most people do throughout the day. Mm-hmm. So that, again, at the end of the day, you probably sleep better. You wake up more refreshed. Would you say that's true?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mentioned when I started taking yoga, experience that peace of mind. At that time, I was a terrible sleeper. I'd talk in my sleep. I'd have trouble sleeping, waking up in the middle of the night from dreams. And my sleep was terrible. Now I sleep like a rock. So good luck waking me up.
Really? Yeah. So you sleep through anything?
Yeah.
Thunderstorms or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, does everybody in your family practice yoga? I mean, have you converted everybody or not necessarily?
I wish everybody was practicing as much as I practice, but that's not the case, at least not yet. My stepdaughter's going to Wayne State, and she's taking a yoga class there now, which I'm really excited about. They've all done yoga. They've all enjoyed it, but none of them have taken it as seriously as I have.
Mm-hmm.
My youngest daughter's 11. She practiced probably for 3-4 years in a row at kids' yoga classes. You know, the whole family has at some point.
Mm-hmm. But they haven't kept it up like you have?
Not to the level I have, no.
Oh, so your wife doesn't practice yoga per se?
She does, just not as often.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you do it every day and you meditate every day?
Yes, yeah.
Would you say you meditate twice a day or...?
Most days I get in 2 meditations a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's like anything. I'm not going to be so hardcore that if I don't get that second meditation in that I'm angry.
Right. Well, there again, that goes against what, you know,
the whole grain.
Right. What you've learned to do, you know, or how to react.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're actually doing the class, is that in essence how you get your yoga in?
No. Somewhat, a little bit, you can do that. And if I've got a really small class and people that are really experienced in yoga, it's possible. But it's not the same as when you practice on your own. When you're teaching, you're always you're watching your students. You're not totally inward because you're having to talk and project and think about, you know, where you're going next, where you've been with the practice. So it is different, and I think that's a mistake a lot of yoga teachers make, is not having their own personal practice. It's very important.
So they get caught up in teaching and they don't really relax themselves.
Yeah, they don't take that time to go inward and really practice for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Do a lot of schools teach yoga? I mean, you teach it here and you say that at Wayne State they have classes. Do other colleges have these classes?
Wayne County Community College has yoga classes. I'm teaching a class there on Fridays now. So I think most of the colleges do. Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that, because it seems to me that yoga has become much more popular recently, and I think it's primarily due to the physical aspect. Most people look at it as physical exercise. Have you found that to be true?
Yeah, I mean, you know, people come into yoga originally wanting stress relief, wanting to lose some weight, maybe wanting some more flexibility. They're not coming in the door saying, I want to go inward. I want to peel away my labels and find my true nature.
Right.
You know, that's not happening.
Right.
Which is okay. It doesn't matter how you come to yoga. I came to yoga out of curiosity. You know, whatever gets you there is fine. But you're going to find yourself, if you keep practicing, being transformed.
Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how could they do so?
You can get in touch with me through our website, which is y4peace.org, the letter Y, the number 4, the word peace.org. We also have a phone number, 734-282-9642, someone can call the yoga center and leave a message for me.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a personal email that I will give out. It's jim@y4peace.org.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you do these classes, is this something that is done all day? I mean, are you busy with that all day usually, or not necessarily?
Are you talking about me personally, or
yes,
the yoga center?
Well,
or
the yoga center. I mean, are you giving lessons throughout the day? And I know there's probably different times where people are more apt to come to learn yoga as opposed to maybe like the middle of the day when most people are working. Does that provide different working hours for you, perhaps early in the morning and late in the evening when people are available to do it?
Yeah, I start pretty early. I start my first class at 5:30 in the morning.
Really? People actually get up and
people
come?
Actually, yeah. Come at 5:30 in the morning and practice yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that do love it. They say there's no better way to start your day, and I have to agree with them. I feel great the rest of the day. Some days I teach some morning classes, and sometimes I teach some evening classes some nights. So just my schedule varies. And every other weekend, I'm usually doing the 200-hour higher learning program for people that really want to learn and get serious about yoga.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also have a retreat during the year, correct?
Correct, yeah. We just did a retreat this past weekend in Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
And we do one every season, you know, winter, spring, summer, fall.
Mm-hmm.
The retreats are a great way for people to have a little mini vacation, get in a lot of yoga, and do some techniques that are kind of mind-blowing in a way.
Right.
Some of these techniques really get to the core of finding your true self. So.
Right. Well, I think also you mentioned, or what I read is there's biking available, things like that. I mean, physical
this retreat,
types of exercise.
Yeah, this is this past retreat that we did this weekend was the first one that we did where we included some mountain biking tours.
Mm-hmm.
The retreat center that we go to has some amazing trails. But there's other things to do when people are up there. You know, it's not 24/7 yoga practice while we're up there. So you have some free time. So if you want to get out and hike, or if you bring a kayak and kayak the Pigeon River, or the retreat center has a couple canoes up there. So there's different activities that you can get out and do in your free time.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that you're more physical during, you know, just your regular waking hours, because you have relaxed more through yoga and you move better, anything like that?
I couldn't imagine going through life and doing what I do without my yoga practice.
Mm-hmm.
I think my body would just be an achy mess.
Right. But do you run or anything like that? Do any type of exercise like that?
I mountain bike. I still play hockey. I ran a marathon in 2003, the Detroit Marathon, and I haven't run a lot since then, but I'm getting interested in it again.
Yeah. Well, usually one marathon's enough, isn't it?
I'm starting to think that, you know, no.
No?
Okay. I might have to do it again.
Really? Well, more power to you. I know that's always a challenge. But thank you very much for doing it. It's doing this show. It's really been enlightening, and I've enjoyed listening and learning about yoga. Thank you very much, Jim.
My pleasure. It's been great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, I just want to thank my special guest this month, Jim Pirro. He is a yoga instructor and president of Yoga for Peace. Very interesting. I really didn't know that much about yoga other than the few things that I've heard. I've had some friends take yoga classes, but I didn't really realize that there was so much to yoga, and it's good to know, and I don't know, maybe, what the heck, I'll try it. You never know. So I just want to thank Jim very much for being able to do the show. I also want to thank my producer, Brandon McKay, for helping me out. He always helps me out. I really, really appreciate it. And be sure to come back next month, Tuesday, November 16th, for another edition of Metaphysically Speaking. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Magical Notebook. Magical Notebook, can you hear me? Testing, testing. Magical Notebook, hello? All right. Yes, it is I. This is Jimmy. I'm your non-resident spaceman. I'm brought to you by forces beyond my understanding. Across space and time. To the good people at WHFR Dearborn. On the campus of Henry Ford Community College in Dearborn, Michigan. And, if you might be so lucky, perhaps you're listening via the internet, whfr.fm. I don't know, but I've been told they're the only station making waves. So it's me. It's Jimmy. I am your non-resident spaceman. And, if you don't understand, that's okay. I don't either. But hopefully I'll do my best to explain. So, as I am one to do, it's time for a national anthem. So here, a national anthem of Poland, as performed by the Orlando Philharmonic Symphony. This is called Still Alive.